Coming to you live from the center of Belito on a Tuesday afternoon. It's the 30th of April, 2024. And as the time ticks towards the zenith of the hour, 2 o'clock, we start the afternoon show somewhat prematurely because today I have a very special guest in the studio with me. And in the interest of transparency, I must inform you that the following interview has been booked and paid for by the political party concerned. In this case, the political party concerned is the Democratic Alliance, the DA, currently the official opposition in the National Assembly. And the views expressed during the course of this interview do not necessarily reflect those of Radio Life and Style. But you will hear some of the views of my very special guest this afternoon. Francois Rogers is the Democratic Alliance's provincial leader for KZN. He's currently serving his second term as the DA's leader in the province. And with over 25 years behind him as a public representative, he has some strong views on what the KZN populace and the country indeed needs from its politicians to unlock its enormous potential. And he joins me in studio right now. Francois, welcome. Welcome to Radio Life and Style. It's good to be chatting to you live in Belito this afternoon.
Good afternoon, Dave. It's great to be here.
I wonder why I can't hear you. I tell you why I can't hear you, because you're on that microphone. So we hit it again.
Good afternoon, Dave, and good afternoon to your listeners. It's great to be here and in Belito.
Well, look, we've got less than a month to go until we all head to the polls in what is unquestionably the most significant and hotly contested election since the first democratic election 30 years ago, back in 1994. As the Democratic Alliance's provincial leader in KZN, you're currently touring the province, and today you're in Belito, where you'll be holding a public meeting in Towns Hall Park this evening, starting at 6 o'clock, and you'll be taking questions from the public. So what should residents consider, and why should they consider attending this afternoon?
Well, I think importantly, Dave, if you believe that our province is not going in the direction that it should be going in, if you're concerned about education, about crime, about unemployment, inequality, poverty, I think, we get this opportunity every 5 years. It's called democracy. And people can change the future and the direction of which the province is going.
Okay. Now, both Etegwini and the province of KZN are currently run by the African National Congress, the ANC. Yesterday, the Democratic Alliance in KZN delivered its State of the City address for Etegwini, which is a metro that the DA has firmly set its sights on. And this afternoon, the mayor of Etegwini, Councillor Mxoli Sikaunda, is set to deliver his official State of the City address. How do you expect his address is going to compare to the Democratic Alliance's?
Well, I can just look at the state of the city. And the state of the city is one of disaster. If one looks at the water outages, if one looks at the power outages, if one looks at the cleanliness of the city, the other thing that breaks my heart is if one looks at the beachfront, which used to be a sort of vibrant, collecting and engaging area, is now just an empty space. And in my opinion, nothing in Etegwini actually works. I don't see anything work. What the mayor is going to tell people is what the ANC continually give us as promises. He's going to promise he's going to sort out the water. He's going to promise he's going to pull the city back into a tourist destination. But it's not what people are experiencing on the ground. Far from it.
Now, obviously, the Democratic Alliance's State of the City address feeds directly into the party's provincial pledge. What are some of the key points in the DA's provincial pledge for KZN?
Well, if I may, Dave, let me just stick to Etegwini for a moment.
Sure.
I think one of the most important things we've seen is where municipalities fail, administrators are appointed to try and turn the situation around. Umzinduzi would be an example. They've had 3 administrators over 7 years. Very little has changed. When we come into government on the 30th, the first thing we'll do is appoint a competent official to be able to administrate and get Etegwini out of its mess. It's a game of politics. The ANC govern provincially, as you said, and they don't want to expose themselves when it comes to Etegwini. But we would certainly take that step, both in Umzinduzi and in Etegwini, to turn it around. I think as far as our pledges are concerned, We did an enormous amount of polling to find out what troubles people, what is their concerns. It's very easy for a politician to determine what your problems are. And the problems are around jobs, around water supply, around electricity and Eskom, around health, and around education. Crime is another big one. And lastly, corruption in our state. Those are the big issues that that people have spoken to us about. Those are issues that we believe need to be addressed.
And all of which I wholeheartedly agree with, but here is the thing. We've heard for an awfully long time, I'm talking as a South African citizen, I think South African citizens have been listening to politicians talking about change for a hell of a long time. And it seems to be kind of easy to do, to talk about change. It seems to be extremely difficult to make it happen. Why is that?
Well, I think it's political will, and I think it's also creating a capable and ethical state. I think that's what it's all about. And if there's no political will, then you actually don't get to it. You know, coming into an election and declaring that you are a party of liberation, but in 30 years you've got issues like I've just mentioned, those pledges, then you're a party of liberation. You're not a party of government because you haven't proven yourself. And that's, of course, where the DA, where we believe we're head and shoulders above the rest. Where we do govern in the Western Cape, in Cape Town, Umgeni is a wonderful success story for us, where we've been governing for 2 years. We believe that we've got the solutions, we've got the answers. And, you know, we're not professing to be doing something that we haven't already succeeded at.
Reference the Western Cape, for example. But, you know, there's been, I think it was Tony Leon recently in Bolito, the launch of his book, saying, you know, the ANC is not really a... It's not really a political party. It's a liberation movement. And no liberation movement historically has ever stayed longer than 20 years in government anyway. So it's kind of almost a fait accompli that there will be a major, significant change. But at the same time, there are those that are saying, well, you know, it's 20 years, call it 20 years, because 30 years of so-called freedom and 20 years of almost 20 years of maladministration now. And the Democratic Alliance has been there all along, pointing out the issues, and quite rightly so. But there are many that say it's easy to point out the problems. Why has the official opposition not acted more significantly and taken legal recourse where necessary to improve the situation?
Dave, let me answer your question this way. Could you imagine a South Africa that didn't have a strong opposition like the Democratic Alliance? Where would we be today? The fact that we are exposing the weaknesses, the fact that we are keeping a watch, the fact that we do go to court and win against the ANC, I think those are important. You must also remember it's a lot easier to be in opposition than in governance. Mm. A lot easier. But again, we speak from experience. Look at Umgeni, the town of Umgeni, which is made up of Howick and Hilton. And you look what a fellow like Chris Pappas has done, who's our candidate for premier. When we took over the municipality, we had over 20 million rand debt. We've managed to settle that debt, so we're saving that interest, that capital repayment, which is going into infrastructure. And, the proof is in the pudding. You talk to people, you listen to people, and people are excited, and they can see things are happening. Streets are being repaired. Verges are being repaired. Lights are being put up. Robots are now getting solar panels onto them. So when there's load shedding, we have robots in Howick and Hilton. Why can't eThekwini do the same?
Well, as someone that I spoke to very close to the problem, has said that the issue really is that, for example, the metro, the council itself, has become so bloated with jobs for pals situations that it's impossible to fix because you cannot get rid of those that have been placed in positions for which they are patently unsuited. because of the labor law, et cetera, et cetera. So anyone coming into the situation wanting to do the right thing has got an enormous headache from the get-go. How do you approach it?
Yeah. So as I said originally, it's political will that turns governance around. And you did right about Etekwini. If you take, for example, the head of water, he runs the entire infrastructure water system. He has, if you Google the fellow, he has qualifications in hospitality. Now, I ask you with tears in my eyes, how can you run a multi-billion rand city's water infrastructure when you only have qualifications in the hospitality industry? But that's the problem with the ANC, you see, and that's the governance problem. They've filled all of our political positions and senior appointments with cadres and working on a patronage network. I'll give you an example. I serve on finance in the province. 77% of our entire budget is spent on salaries in the province. What's left for service delivery? Education comes in at tops, just under 90%. Our Department of Education, 90%. Of its budget is spent on compensation of employees. What's left?
Now, and yet there is still an enormous hole where there should be competent educators. There are temporary people in holding positions. And if we're in that situation right now, and again, I come back to you made a very bold statement, a very positive, optimistic statement of when we are in power. And presuming that happens, how do you then go about unbundling that mess? Because are there not laws to prevent you getting rid of folk that are gainfully, in inverted commas, employed?
All right, again, I can...
Legally employed.
Yeah, I can speak from experience. So when we took over Mgani, we had exactly the same problem. We had senior officials that were there because of their political connection and not necessarily because of the ability to do a job. So the first thing we did was we did a lifestyle audit on all of our senior and middle management that we took over. Some decided to abandon ship before we'd even concluded that, so that was interesting. And then, of course, you've got to do a skills audit on those particular people. We did exactly that. And where some people were found wanting in their skills and the ability to be able to implement services, through accountability and consequence, we managed to replace the majority of the senior officials who were there because of their patronage and their cadre deployment.
I'm my very special guest this afternoon in studio, Francois Rogers, the DA provincial leader for KZN, in conversation. And we're going to take a little brief musical interlude to let you catch your breath, and we'll be back on the flip side.
Way
It's 2:15 on a Tuesday afternoon. That's Ed Sheeran, the A-Team, fading into the background. And my very special studio guest this afternoon, Francois Rogers, the DA provincial leader in town, because this evening at 6 o'clock, Townsend Hall, you'll have an opportunity to meet with Francois and his team and put to them the kind of questions that I'm trying to, on your behalf, put right now on the show. Anything else that, of course, we don't cover, you'll be able to do this evening. And in the interest of transparency, this interview has been booked and paid for by the Democratic Alliance. Francois, back to the task at hand. Let's take a look at what the leadership of a possible KZN provincial government might look like under the DA's premier candidate. You mentioned his name, Chris Pappas. He's an unusual character, an unusually competent young man with an impressive track record in local politics. But what makes him the right man to lead this mission for the Democratic Alliance?
Dave, I've worked with Chris. Chris was on my was in my provincial caucus. He was the spokesperson for agriculture. So I've seen Chris's ability. We've obviously seen his ability now as a mayor of a municipality. And I think what makes Chris stand out is a couple of things. One, he's very principled. He's very energetic. He has the ability to speak more than two languages, which does help. We all know Chris wakhulumisa isiZulu nje. He speaks better Zulu than I do. In fact, when you close your eyes, you wouldn't imagine Chris, you know, being of European descent.
So he dances well as well.
He does indeed, better than I do.
I think it's an age thing. I'm true. There with you.
True.
But more than that, I think it's more than that. In a sense, I come back to the issue right at the beginning. I made the statement that I think South Africans are kind of skeptical of politics and politicians in general. Because, let's face it, I think many politicians are in the business of politics because it's a good career. Mm. It's, you're well paid. And whether you're making a difference or not, the money is there. The increases tend to come whether the economy is doing well or not. And pretty much the last thing on their minds really is what anyone else is feeling about things, how things are going economically, socially, politically, in any other way. I think maybe a man like Pappas is a disruptor because he has made a difference. But that's... Are there other Pappases in the Democratic Alliance? And obviously, present company excluded. Mm.
Dave, look, I can speak from myself. I'm a businessman. I've been a businessman since 1986. I only got into politics as a councillor in Kokstad way back just prior to 1994. And the reason I got into politics and as a councillor was I wanted to make a difference. I have an investment in Kokstad. I'm an invested businessman, and I now have grandchildren, and I've got children, obviously, and I want to see things work. Believe me that I would far rather be in my business, where I'd be very comfortable. Thank goodness I have a good wife who runs my business for me. But I think one needs to look at the individual, and you must never, when people tell you why they do what they do, then you start questioning. I've got it the wrong way around. When they tell you what they do, then you need to start questioning. But it's why do people do what they do? And I think someone like Chris, and I believe myself, I do it because I want to make a difference. I want to see a change. After 30 years of democracy, the inequality that we face, we've just celebrated Freedom Day. Political freedom without a quality of life means very little to me. And I think that's why I continue to do what I do.
But surely, and I think if you ask everyone in the business of politics why they all say that, and possibly genuinely so, initially, I want to make a difference. I want to make it a better South Africa. We want the same. But there's that thing about power, because there's no doubt that with political ascension comes power, and power corrupts, and absolute power, as they say, corrupts absolutely. Yeah. And so I think you have a situation in it's very tough to suddenly become powerful, and with the power comes the wealth, and with the wealth comes all of the trappings of the wealth, and it's a wonderful well to drink from. Then do you really care about the suffering of your fellow man and woman who you grew up with? Because you've transcended that. The last thing you want to do is lose your place at the well. I'm using that term euphemistically as well. Some might call it the trough. But this is politics, and it's not unique to South Africa. It's ubiquitous. What does the Democratic Alliance structure do to prevent that from happening? Because surely it will happen if you become the next ruling party.
Well, I think if one looks at a public rep salary, councillors, MP in MPL, it's not an exorbitant amount of money. In my opinion, it's not, because I know what I generate out of business. And I couldn't do what I do without having a supplement to my salary. The problem with politicians comes when you're at the trough, and there are other ways in which you want to generate revenue, whether it be through tenders or...
But are you saying that then you cannot live well as a politician alone from your political remuneration?
No, I think you can live comfortably, but not wealthily.
Well, an MP's salary, what is it now, over R1 million a year?
It's just over 1.1.
I put it to you, there are not many South Africans in that. There are, you know, a few, but statistically, if you tell the average man in the street that you can't live particularly well on 1.1 million rand a year, they might look at you with a slightly querulous look.
Yeah, I think if you then look at how the ANC has bulked up salaries for senior officials, for our director generals and that are earning 2.5 million rand.
Oh, yeah.
Those are astronomical. You must remember, MPs and MPLs also do an enormous amount of traveling. You know, I get to go home perhaps once every 3 weeks. It's not worth the money I'm being paid, quite honestly. I would rather sit at Kokstad with my wife and my dogs and not give a damn. But I believe that we can make a difference. I believe we've shown that we can make a difference. And I think we've got systems in place in our party that stop people from putting their fingers into the pie or into the proverbial till. And that's what it's all about.
Let's talk about this election coming up. There's been a lot of confusion around the multi-party charter and the moonshot pact. And when you arrive on election day and are faced with a plethora of names on a piece of paper or two or three, and you really haven't got a clue, there are those that are afraid that by doing anything, they effectively are making an incorrect decision. There are those that say, well, look, if we support one of the moonshot pact, it's the same as supporting the Democratic Alliance, but we're not putting all our eggs in the same basket. Not really sure about that basket because, you know, track record, etc., etc. However, if we don't vote, what then? It is confusing. What would your simple explanation be to the man or woman in the street listening to this, wondering how does it work, and why should one vote for the Democratic Alliance instead of any plethora of the moonshot, because you're all together in the same boat, are you not? So it doesn't really matter who you vote for.
All right, look, the moonshot pact is on a national level. So my campaign is structured around the province of KwaZulu-Natal. But here's my suggestion. When you vote for a political party, why do you vote for them? You look at their ideology, you look at their principles, you look at their philosophy, and you also look at their track record. It's as simple as that. You know, if you look in KwaZulu-Natal, which is the party that has a track record of good governance and which doesn't? You know, the ANC has a shocking track record of governance. The EFF doesn't govern anywhere. The MK has never governed. You know, you've got to say to yourself, well, there's only one choice for me. That has to be the Democratic Alliance. Yeah. Remember, coalitions and the Moonshot Pact, these things will only fall into place after the election, post 29 May, once we see what the actual results are. The interesting statistic in our province is that currently polling, our polling and independent polling, is putting the ANC at below 30%. If you want change, you have to vote for change.
And an interesting question that I wanted to ask you, based on what I've been able to glean from various sources, but I think Rob Herzog summed it up quite nicely. He said, you know, you're dealing with criminals, mafia-style criminals, absolute thugs and desperados. John Steenhuisen's a hell of a nice guy. Musi Maimane's a lovely guy. Herman Mashaba is a nice. All these are lovely and extremely competent leaders, and will make a fabulous leader going forward, but not for the next 5 years. The next 5 years, you need to fight fire with fire. You need a Gayton McKenzie type gangster who will get in there, boots and all, and clean up the mess. What do you say to that?
No, I think if you vote for Gayton McKenzie, then you want these mafias to continue, your construction mafias, your water mafias, which is what's happening in Durban with water tankers. Again, you've got to look at a clean record. I certainly would never vote for a man that has spent time in jail with a criminal record. I wouldn't vote for Jacob Zuma. When he came to shake my hand in the State of the Province, I refused to shake his hand. He's a criminal. Why? I would never vote for a criminal. Makes absolutely no sense.
So, in other words, the leopard in the spots, take it from where it comes, in that sense. You don't believe a man can change?
No, in politics particularly, because as you said earlier, you're exposed to so much in government, whether it's local government, provincial government. You know, we've got a terrible history under the ANC of money disappearing, money ending up in sofas, no accountability, no consequence. These are things, you know, that you need to take cognizance of. I certainly, criminals in politics, nah.
So, going forward now, a man like McKenzie has been on record, and I quote him merely because I was interested in hearing that he is going to, these are the changes that he says he's going to make, and you can judge him by it. We're going to bring back conscription. We're going to bring back the death penalty. We're going to get rid of illegal aliens en masse. We're going to do, what is the Democratic Alliance going to do?
Well, firstly, you've got to work within the Constitution. You know, to go in rhetoric like this, Jacob Zuma is the same. He's come out to say that pregnant teenagers should be banished to Robben Island. He made a ludicrous statement like that. Our jails are too full. Therefore, Roman Dutch law should be chucked out of the window, and we should go back to tribal law. But these are just popular statements. That's just people that want the vote and want the power. Go and engage with them and ask them, well, how are you actually going to send every pregnant teenager to Robben Island? Tell us, how are you going to do that in terms of the Constitution? And you ask Gayton McKenzie exactly the same. So there's
But they've made those statements, and I agree with you, they are wild. But they do have a kind of a cathartic ring about them. I think South Africans are dying to hear what practically are the steps that you're going to take to get rid of the rot and to implement a new system that puts us back on track for economic growth, for jobs, for security, for peace, prosperity, all those good things.
Well, it comes back to the principle that I said, and that's to create an ethical and capable state. Now, in order to do that, what happens now? We have special investigations done, SIU investigations, which all end up in the Premier's office. The Premier, she's a member of the African National Congress. She's not going to want to expose her comrades in some of these SIUs. That's why we've got 186 SIU investigations that have never been concluded. We say it needs to be an independent body of any political party that then undertakes investigations so that you can have consequences and so that you can have people put behind bars. That's what people want to see. They want to see people in jail for committing fraud and for committing corporate crime.
So, in other words, there needs to be a catharsis, a national catharsis. We want now to see results, and the Democratic Alliance is going to give us those results?
Indeed. That's the first thing we'll do when we take over. All those SIU investigations that are piled up collecting dust in the Premier's office. We will allocate an independent investigating body authorised to conclude those and to put these criminals in jail.
And in conclusion, do you have any final words for those who are eligible and registered to vote on the 29th of May?
Well, I think importantly, remember that you can only vote at the voting station where you are registered. In the past, you couldn't do that. You could drive around and look for an empty voting station. You cannot do that. You have to vote where you are registered. And remember, you can also request a special vote, which is on the Monday or the Tuesday preceding the 29th. And if you go onto the DA's website, you can register. And by doing that, you can avoid the queues.
Doesn't that apply only to those that are working on the 29th or that are infirm?
No, it doesn't. No. It's. I think the IEC have also realized to try and avoid the queues on the Wednesday. You can apply. You'll get an SMS confirming, and you can then vote on the Monday or the Tuesday instead of the Wednesday.
Interesting. Well, there it is. You've been getting the perspective of my very special studio guest, Francois Rogers, Democratic provincial leader for KZN. Remember, the DA is inviting you to catch Francois live in Ballito this evening at a special public meeting in Townsend Hall, that's Townsend Park and the hall in Townsend Park, at 6 p.m., where he will be taking your questions. And as we wrap up this interview, here's a reminder that the interview you've just heard was booked and paid for by the political party concerned, the Democratic Alliance, the DA. The views expressed during the course of this interview do not necessarily reflect those of Radio Life and Style. And once again, Francois, I thank you for joining me on this afternoon broadcast, and much success with the elections on the 29th. The afternoon show will come.